But there are some things in solid-state physics which apparently may be or might be connected to fluid mechanics, and I'm a fluid mechanicist. So with fluid mechanics, you can ask me whatever you want, and it's really that I'm supposed to answer any question. So what it's all about? It's Ohm's law, the most basic high school, and in some countries it's even middle school subject. It's how you drive current through the conductor. And so we all learned that you have an electric field, which is a gradient of potential, and it's locally proportional to current or to the mean velocity of electrons. That's one of the most basic law, and this talk will be about the violation of this law and how it could be violated. So let's look first of all, even though we speak about current flow by Ohm's law, it's not the flow of a fluid which we'll see when we open it up, for example. So what's the difference between fluid mechanics and Ohm's law? Why one is another type of a flow? And then you realize that in Ohm's law, every electron basically flies by itself. So it has an electric field which acts on it, it flies, it hits something, it could be defect or phonon or whatever, it loses its momentum, and then accelerated by electric field again, and then flies again, etc. That's the motion of electric current which basically produces Ohm's law. In fluid, it flows totally different. Every particle of a fluid, of course, participate in a random motion, a thermal motion, the way that electrons also do, but they also interact very strongly with each other. Namely, what is the particles of the fluid do? They exchange momentum one with another much, much faster than they exchange momentum with something else. And that makes hydrodynamic flow totally different from Ohm's law. Okay? And hydrodynamic basically describes how these quantities, momentum or energy that particle exchange with each other, they now can collectively flow. So you can now do a macroscopic coarse grain description. You can say, okay, I'm not now interested in the particles because they so strongly interact with each other. I can average my piece of a matter, of a continuous medium, and consider it as a macroscopic, still small parcel, but macroscopic, which moves with some mean velocity. And the motion of this pieces is described by hydrodynamics. And then it seems that such approach could be totally irrelevant to the motion of electrons in a metal, because electrons in a metal much faster lose their momentum normally when they interact with defects of phonons rather than interacting with among themselves. But there are some new and not that new systems, of which you probably know more than me, where it is claimed that there could be very strong interaction between particles, charge carriers, and particularly electrons and holes. And those interaction could be much stronger and happen on much shorter scales than the interaction where they lose momentum to outside particle. And I just briefly mention a few examples, and mostly this will be about graphene, and at the end I'll show you some experimental data. It's all pretty recent. It's our paper was published, and experimental works were published in February, so it's relatively recent things. But there were some predictions about strong interaction regimes, in particular near the Dirac point in graphene. And I would rather skip it and just show you some estimates. So if you consider, and this is in this upper line, this is away from a Dirac point in graphene. That's usually typical inverse time of the electron interaction, behaves like square temperature divided by Fermi energy. And when you approach the charge neutrality point, that it's usually goes linearly with time. And alpha is, that was Sagdev actually calculated, and other people, so some kind of logarithmic factor which is related to the fact that electrons in graphene interact in a sense much stronger than they would you expect from particles having quadratic dispersion law. And then there are estimates which would show you that you can have this inverse rate, which would be time, and this time in principle could be shorter than a typical scattering time on defects, which of course everything depends on parameter, and there are in solid states many different intervals of parameter, but it is these estimates which made us thinking what could we do and what kind of a current flow would happen in a situation in which indeed electrons exchange momentum among themselves much faster than they lose momentum to a defect, or lattice, or whatever. And so the rest of the talk would be how one would have and see the current and what would replace Ohm's law in this case. And then one can do hydrodynamic description. And hydrodynamic description means that I can now introduce a macroscopic velocity. It's an average velocity of all charge carriers in a given infinitesimal point. It's now a macroscopic volume, which moves somehow. And it satisfies a usual Navier-Stokes equation, which is just a Karsgren description. It describes the momentum. And I assume my fluid incompressible, namely that the concentration of carriers is assumed to be constant everywhere. And it's called Navier-Stokes equation. It tells you that this is a time derivative of velocity, time derivative at a given point plus material derivative along the flow. This is just acceleration of the given fluid particle. And it's equal to the viscous force, which appears because of friction of neighboring layers. And it's now proportional to the Laplacian of velocity. And here is a force which appears because of a gradient of pressure. And of course, pressure would contain a chemical potential, which if you have an external field, for example, electric field, that would be part of this pressure or of this potential. And that's basically the equation. And kinematic viscosity here could be always estimated as some typical velocity. And having in mind metal, I would, at relatively low temperature, I would consider it just Fermi velocity times some time. In a sense, kinematic viscosity is velocity times typical mean free pass. Just to give you intuition about it, what is kinematically more viscous, water or air? How would you feel? It means that I have a fluid which flows with a given velocity on a given scale. And I just don't know what is density, whatever. It's pure kinematics, right? It's air and it's water. What would be more viscous? What molecules interact stronger? If molecules interact stronger, then mean free pass would be larger or smaller? Smaller. Then water is less viscous than air because molecules of the air interact. You see, it is a velocity squared times some time of interaction. So water is 15 times less viscous than air from this viewpoint, right? And in particular, when you go to Large Hadron Collider and when you look at quark gluon plasma, which is a very strongly interacting matter, it's very close to a perfect liquid because it's a very strongly interacting. Mean free pass is small and viscosity is very, very low. It's something counterintuitive about it because we usually tend to think about viscosity dynamically, how much force you need to move something viscous, how much force you need to move through the viscous fluid. And of course, it depends on density, and water is much more dense than air. But kinematically, the stronger matter interacts, the more the less viscous it is. Anyway, so this is a Navier-Stokes equation, and in general, it describes all motions of all fluids. But we will be interested in a very special limit of it, because our electrons really move in what is called very viscous fluid, and you later I'll show you the game's measurement recent. Yes, Max?
Sorry, can you come back to the last slide?
Yes.
So the regime that you're considering is EF much greater than temperature, is it correct?
This equation works always in the sense, but it depends what is your pressure. Now, if you really want this potential to be kind of expressed in this simple way, that will be considered low temperature, comparing, which is for most metals more or less okay.
It's not a relativistic limit of
gravity. Well, the relativistic limit depends on whether you are in a how you close to charge neutrality. So in principle, you can be in this regime and in that regime too, if I understand it right. But which means that my temperature should not be very, very low. But it's at least for this consideration of a chemical potential, I do need it to be smaller than Fermi.
But then in which way is it? Shouldn't it be just described by thermal liquid theory then?
Well, from the hydrodynamic viewpoint, I don't care at which microscopics describes it. I'm just, what I do need, I need that the interaction is much, interaction between electrons is much stronger, namely that the typical momentum exchange time much less than the scattering on impurities. But otherwise, it could be any microscopics. Okay. So, but it's even simpler case that we'll be looking into it, and namely that in this Navier-Stokes equation, there is a dimensionless parameter which tells you what is the ratio of a viscous term to the first term, which is called inertia term, which is just ddt, acceleration of the particle. And it depends, the ratio of these two terms, maybe I'll just return for a second back to this. So if you ask, what would be the ratio of this term divided by this term? This would be typical v squared divided by a typical scale. And this will be nu v divided by typical scale squared. And the ratio of these two terms is called Reynolds number. And it's a measure how relative inertia and viscosity plays in the fluid. Namely, that you push a fluid, after a while, friction would viscous friction would stop it. And then you ask how this is compared with the typical time scales, and we'll be considering relatively low velocity, which means that this Reynolds number will be very, very small. And everything which is left out of our equation, it's called Stokes equation now, not Navier-Stokes. It is just this equation. It describes motion in a very, very viscous fluid. All microorganisms move according to this equation. It's a linear equation. And it's very, very non-trivial. And most of the talk will be about this equation, despite its linearity and simplicity. First of all, it's very non-trivial to swim or to pump in a very viscous fluid. Swimming and pumping is the same thing, right? What is swimming or pumping? It's a periodic change of shape to move, right? That's swimming. So how one can move in this very viscous fluid in a syrup, right? If you really periodically change your shape, if you change your shape some way and then you change your shape back, that because this is a linear equation and you have your forces directly related to your velocity, you just retrace your motion. So whatever motion you did changing this way, you would retrace when you're changing that way. It tells you that really if you want to move inside the very viscous fluid, you need to make a circle in some phase space. It must be an irreversible process. That's what spermatozoid does when it does this by its tail, right? It's an and some bacteria just make a wave which run on their surface. So every point on the surface moves like this, but the phase which tells you that it's a wave make it irreversible. And it does not matter how fast you do, there is no time here, it's a pure geometry. And this long ago that Frank Wilczek actually noticed that the motion in a very viscous fluid is just in some kind of a very interesting and non-abelian gauge theory, just to show you how it works. From it's so-called Purcell swimmer. So it starts from this shape and it ends with this shape. Now, how you really do it? So you first of all change this into this, then you change that into this, so you come from this shape into this shape, then you return back, then you return back and you return to it. And I'll leave you as a pleasure exercise to check and to understand which direction it would move, right? And so what did I do? If I characterize this system by two angles, that's the only parameter they have. So in this theta 1, theta 2 space, I just made a circle. And the displacement is an area of the circle properly dimensionalized, right? So it is this, it's a pure geometry. Whatever bacteria do, they're very, very geometrically conscious. They know about making proper circles. Now, yes.
So what was the role of the magnetic field then? You're talking about interface and gauge.
No, there's no magnetic field in the sense that all non-abelians
is related to the fact that if you make circle this way, then you move this. But if you make circle this way, then you move that. Here, if I first move not this leg, but this leg, I would move in the opposite direction. That's my non-abelian character of the motion. Okay? But what I do, I mean, I'm swimming, right, or pumping. I'm changing shape periodically, right? This. Okay, I return to the same position, I moved somewhere. Which way I move encoded in the direction of this circle in the phase space. Okay? Fluid mechanics is a beautiful science. One of the goals of my talk is to promote the secret knowledge of fluid mechanics among physicists. So now it's our work with Leonid Levitov, which is, first I say a few words about what you know very well, namely Ohm's law, and then we'll return back to viscous flow just to compare it. So in the Ohm's law, I have it differently. I have current, which is a concentration of carrier stand velocity equal to the electric field, right? So not Laplacian of velocity equal to the electric field, but velocity itself proportional to the electric field. Now, if I really consider that my electric field is a gradient of potential and my current is proportional to velocity, and as I assumed before, my flow is incompressible, it means that the divergence of velocity is equal to zero. It tells me that the Laplacian of a potential equal to zero. Of course, if there are no charges, of course, Laplacian of electrostatic potential is equal to zero. Electrostatic potential is a harmonic function. Now, if my velocity is incompressible, I can always introduce so-called stream function. It's a function of which a curl, I'm in two dimensions all the time, a transversal derivative gives me my velocity, namely that x component of velocity is dy psi, and y component of velocity is dx psi, one with a psi minus. And psi is a function so that if I take point one and point two, then psi 1 minus psi 2 is a flux which goes through any line which relates these two points. Because of incompressibility, it does not depend which line I connect these two points, but the difference of psi is just amount of a fluid which flows. It also satisfies Laplace equation. So that's my view of Ohm's law. For me, Ohm's law, it's a harmonic stream function. And for you, it's a harmonic potential. Well, actually, it's both. That's Ohm's law in this way. Now, let's see how different it is from the viscous law. Now, if I have this equation, now that I have here Laplacian instead of just constant conductivity or space dependent, but still just a factor, which I had for Ohm's law, and if I would again consider incompressible case, I may introduce now vorticity. And vorticity would be a Laplacian of my psi function. And for Ohm's law, Laplacian of psi function was zero. So the vorticity of a current flow in Ohm's regime is zero. What is vorticity? You have an intuitive image of vorticity. If you have a fluid flowing, for example, a puddle, you have a lot of rain here, right? So if you see a fluid flowing and you put a small particle, if there is vorticity of the fluid, this particle would rotate as it moves. Okay, this is just vorticity is a half of angular frequency of rotation of a small dust particle that you place in the flow. So Ohm's flow is irrotational. As it moves, it could be very non-uniform, right? It could be very non-uniform field, producing very non-uniform velocity, but there is no vorticity there. Nothing rotates. Now, we see that the Laplacian of psi is not zero. It is, if I just take a curl of this, I would have zero over here, but I would have Laplacian squared of curl of V, which would be Laplacian to the force of psi. So it's now biharmonic equation, not harmonic equation, which psi satisfy. If somebody learned elasticity theory, this equation also appears in elasticity theory. And it's a beautiful mathematics into it. And of course, if I have both ohmic resistance and viscosity, then I have the viscous term and I have the usual ohmic resistance, and then it satisfies this equation. So just to see how it works, what we'll do, first we just say, solve a simple problem. We put an infinite strip, and we have a current entering here and exiting here, and we ask what would be the flow, how it would flow from here to here in a purely ohmic case when I cross this term, in a purely viscous term when I cross this, and in a mixed, which is more or less realistic situation when I cross this. Any guess? Never listen to anything before you try to guess yourself, right? And never do computations before you try to guess. So what would be your guess would be something new and what would you expect unexpected in a viscous case?
In an ohmic case, you would
expect current flowing like this, right? Just going this way. This is how it all started. This people who learned about this possibility of viscous flow came to me and asked, tell us what would be if you just flow very viscous fluid from one end. We usually don't do it. Some people who do microfluidic manipulation with biological objects, they do this type of experiment, but it's not very often. Anyway, my first guess was wrong, so it's so let me show what actually happened. It's easy to solve it. In the viscous case, it's pretty straightforward. It's this equation, so you need to solve by harmonic equation. The only thing that you need to do, you need to put a boundary condition, current entering here, current exiting here. Everywhere else, velocity is supposed to be zero on the boundary. So you could put different boundary condition, no slip, no stress. People now playing with all this. That's the solution. This, I mean, it's by harmonic equation. It has a solution, analytic function plus z bar times analytic function. That's a general solution of p harmonic equation. So here it is the solution satisfied by this boundary condition. Let's see how it looks. It's a potential. And potential now, if I look at it near close to the contact, it is this form, which you apparently can recognize as a real part of 1 over z squared. Potential is harmonic, by the way, right? And it's interesting. It changes sign when y equal to x, namely, if you take 45 degrees line here and 45 degrees line here, then your potential would be negative and decreasing here and positive and decreasing here. As it would mean your electric field would be looking different ways. Just from this formula, you can see that your electric field will be looking this way here and this way here. Or actually, other way around, it will be looking this way here and this way here. Right? So on this line, electric field looks in the same direction as current. Current everywhere here goes down, but electric field would look opposite. And if you take a gradient of potential, which is electric field, and divide it by current, you would get a resistance, effective resistance at a given point. And it tells you that your resistance here would be positive and here would be negative. So one can measure the resistance, right? How you measure resistance? You put another voltmeter here. It's called non-local resistant measurement, right? So you run current I over here. You measure voltage at some distance. You divide voltage by current, and you call it non-local resistance. It's a standard electrotechnical measurement. And now you can see it as a function of this displacement from this point. Okay? This formula tells you this. This gives you everywhere, but if you put y equal to zero, it will just give you this answer for this quantity. And that's how it looks. First of all, ohmic case, no surprise here. You have red positive potential on a source. You have blue negative potential on a drain. It decays, of course, over here. It's getting red, but it's everywhere red over here, and it's everywhere blue over here, and current flows from source to drain. Pretty boring flow. That's how viscous flow looks like. First of all, it has indeed here positive potential and here negative potential. But immediately, as we've seen, there is 45 degrees here line, and if you have negative here and positive here, namely, the potential here has a sign which is opposite. Moreover, there is a separatrix, of which I'll tell a little bit more, which separates the lines which go from source to drain from a vortex. There are two vortices appear on both sides. In a sense, you can think about this vortex as if a current went this way and then hit a wall and then don't know what to do, so it returns this way, right? So it's a viscous flow, and the main difference, from which I return probably several times, is that now it's non-local. Ohm's law is local. You have a local electric field, which is proportional to local velocity. Now, a local electric field is proportional to the Laplacian of velocity. It depends on the neighboring layers. It's still not an integral, not non-locality in any integral sense, but it already second derivative, which tells you that it depends on the neighboring layers, right? And what does it mean that I have now electric field opposite to the current flow? It means that there are fast flow going this way, which goes from positive to negative in the right direction, like in an ohmic case, and it produces so much viscous drag on a flow here, it just tries to move it along with it. So that electric field need to be opposite to counterbalance this drag to have a stationary flow, right? So in a sense, this fact that you now would have a current flowing opposite to the field, it's because it's not a field locally which determines the direction of a current. It's a motion of a neighboring layers which determines the direction of a current at this point. And you can, and this is all could be analytically calculated. I don't know what you do for a living, but I, for almost 30 years, I was doing turbulent theory, and so solving linear equation is a physical pleasure. You know, solve linear equation and get something interesting. 30 years never happened to me. Even a general ohmic viscous case, it's still linear equation, right? So it's again, it's a just I don't know. Pure joy to solve it. This is a solution. It's not very complicated. It's made out of exponents. And then you can get a general solution and you can see what, yes?
So would the same thing happen if you did the voltage boundary condition instead of constant current?
I'll talk about it in two or three slides down the road. It's an excellent question. Of course, it's what, in principle, one need to pose the problem this way. It's easier this way because we have this biharmonic equation imposed on a stream function. So it's easier to have boundary condition imposed on a stream function, right? And then this is current. Current is a derivative. If you impose them on a voltage, which satisfy harmonic equation, but another set of boundary condition, which is velocity on the wall, which is no slip or no stress, always imposed on velocity. So this type of a problem is mixed problem. You need to solve integral equation, which is still linear, it could be done. Okay. It's a belief in turbulent theory that all equilibrium problems are trivial and solved long ago, and all linear problems are trivial and solved long ago. And of course, both are untrue, but that's what we believe. Anyway, so in a general case, it's a little bit more complicated. It is a voltage that we are interested. You remember this voltage as a function of x, what you measure between opposite walls, you could express it in terms of a now general function, which has this form if you have both density, both ohmic resistance rho and dynamic viscosity eta. And then, of course, in a purely ohmic case for a strip, it's a well-known formula probably obtained 100 years ago. And of course, it's positive, namely that for ohm, it's everywhere the potential is the same as you apply to a constant, and then you see how it goes into a negative. But then you discover that if you have a finite ohm resistivity at a very large distances, it would be always be positive according to this resistance. And then you realize that the resistivity and viscosity two different mechanisms. One is coefficient in front of Laplacian, another is just a factor. So it always depends on a scale. If you have a non-zero viscosity and non-zero resistivity, at a very, very small scale, viscosity would always dominate because it has a Laplacian, and at a very, very large scale, resistivity would always dominate. Let's see how it works. That's a plot of this V as a function of X for a mixed case. And this is parameter which is rho equal to zero is a purely viscous case. And this up is almost totally ohmic case. And it's done for a finite contact, which you can also undo, but just formulas are bulky. So this is done for a contact which has a finite size. So you see that, of course, on a current lead, your potential is positive. If you are in an ohmic regime, it remains positive everywhere, and some viscosity just make a dent in this dependence. But as you increase viscosity further and further, you would get into a region where you have a negative local resistance. And then it's getting deeper and deeper. But eventually, if you have a non-zero ohmic resistance, it would always cross back into positive region. At large distances, your resistivity always dominates. Okay? And this is a dimensionless parameter, which, of course, depends on the width of your strip. The ratio of viscosity and resistivity always includes square root of some lengths. Again, if we return to this computation, we can see what I showed before was for a point contact. And we can, of course, do very easy computations for assuming that we have current entering in a Lorentzian form, which is totally unphysical. You cannot have a current non-zero everywhere, perfectly shaped as a Lorentzian, but it gives a beautiful answer which shows you how the potential changes sign. It's really positive when x less than a, you're inside the contact. A is the size of a contact. When x less than a, you're inside the contact, it's positive. When you go outside of the contact, it's negative. And this formula shows you how it works. But now, when we try to approach reality, we realize that the real way to introduce current into a system, there could be two ways. First of all, you can have a channel. You do this lithography, and in this, let's say, graphene sample, you have something which is a lead, a channel in which you can make, for example, electrons flying ballistically or in any other way. Or you can just put a metal lead, and a metal lead, as you rightly say, would be equipotential. It would have voltage fixed and given. Okay, and so now you need to, this is the relation between voltage and current. And if you set voltage, then it's an integral equation that you need to solve for a current to give you a given voltage. And again, with Levitov, we have this pleasure of, and we still are playing with it. It's a very interesting, it's complex analysis and with immediate physical consequences, which is not that often happens. And then what you recognize, that remember that when it was a equal to zero, it was 1 over x squared. That's a type of singularity that you have for a viscous flow if you have a point contact. Potential goes to infinity as you approach the contact is 1 over x squared. Now, as you make your contact finite, let's see how the singularity is regularized. This is the main target of this exercise. First of all, if you have just a channel with a constant current, then you just see this pole, 1 over x squared, split into two first order poles. So second order poles split into two first order poles. And you have now singularities at the edge of your contact. And each singularity is a first order. Now, you may consider the current not constant inside the lead, but having a parabolic shape, which would mean that the lead itself is a viscous flow. If you have a viscous flow inside a channel, it creates a parabolic profile. And this parabolic profile would make your potential having only logarithmic singularity. But again, the singularities are at the edges. And but that's a solution. It's a very, again, it's a, all complex analysis for physicists is electrostatic. So it's a beautiful electrostatic problem, which you can make total analog of it. And then so it's solving this integral equation. So if you want your potential to be constant inside the lead, So you need a current which have this form. The price you pay for it, your potential would have square root singularity right outside the contour. And this singularity may be of interest and of importance, and in a moment I comment on it. If we ever to build viscous electronics, it is precisely the fact that you can apply voltage. I mean, look what you did. We applied positive voltage inside some interval. What we get? Negative, very large voltage outside. It's a transformation of voltage achieved on a DC current. And if it's not just a dream of theoretician, it could be potentially very important that you can really transform current. You can make it larger, and you can small, and you can reverse the sign of it just by running it through the viscous flow. And again, returning to this picture, one may ask if this singularity could be dependent on the boundary conditions that we impose on our boundaries. Frankly, nobody really understands, and this is a very interesting set of open problems, which really need much more sophisticated condensed metaphysics. Understand what if really in the graphene we have this very strong interaction, what kind of boundary condition we need to impose. And of course it depends whether this would be vacuum here, or it would be some dielectric, or it would be something else. But in particular, one can imagine the boundaries which would be having some finite resistivity. Namely, that the velocity on the border would be not zero, no slip, as fluid mechanics always do, but proportional to the gradient of potential. Namely, that there would be some kind of a finite resistivity on the edge, right? And this would immediately regularize everything, and then one can find out that there would be no singularity of potential, but the fact of negative very near the contact would be, and this would be proportional, of course, to this thing. As this alpha would go to zero, this would go down. So this is about regularization. And then, of course, one can ask if such viscous current would run through it, what would be a heat release? And of course, this is heat release inside electron flow. It's there is no lattice here. Electrons don't interact with lattice in this picture, but as long as they exchange momentum, they always lose energy. Viscous flow is an energy losing flow, and this energy would go into the motion of thermal motion of electrons. And that's the difference again between ohmic case, where you would see a hot spot in one electrode, a hot spot in the other electron, and this would decay aside. If you look at the viscous flow, then you would, of course, see, of course, the hot spots on electrodes, and then you would see a cold spot in the center, and then you would see a cold spot inside these big vortices aside. So it would be a totally different picture. And this is, again, something which people try to measure, because this is something which is related to the temperature, to the local temperature of electron gas. And now to the experiments. Independently and simultaneously, as it often happens, this international team, but this game in Manchester and people from us, they published in Science a couple of, we knew about each other, namely we exchanged manuscripts a couple of months before this. Yes.
What sets the scale of the cold spots, the length scale of the cold spots?
The length scale of the cold, well, first of all, it depends on the size of your, so if it's purely viscous case, then there is no other scale but the width of the strip. And this is something like, I don't know, 10% of it. But if there is a both viscosity and resistance, then the scale is always square root of the ratio. That would give you a scale, right? And so this is the geometry in which they worked. It's conceptually similar, but technically it's a little bit. So they really run current between this and that. this is a gold-plated electrode over here, and the channel, like what I mentioned, where electrons really enter, and they measured voltage between this point and then another side. Okay, so again, they did not move it. It was not possible to change it. But what was possible is to change a concentration of carriers and just look for this regime. And this is this R, which is this V divided by this I. And then you see that it's really that they have a negative part of it, and which kind of make it natural to interpret it in terms of negative resistance. I'm not sure it's right. I maybe late a little comment of it. But this is something which Levitov and Game came to the same conference, and they were giving talks at consecutive days, and so kind of was independent, really. And they measured viscosity. It's huge. It's honey, I mean, really. Water is 100 times less viscosity. Again, it's very difficult to translate, to make analogy between electrons. That's not far from Dirac point, basically, kind of to what extent they can be. And this is, they were changing temperatures and concentrations. And I don't want to comment on all these things, and it's much better to ask them directly. What I really want to comment, and I have an issue with this picture, it's just a snapshot from the figures, and they interpret it by the fact that this negative resistance is due to backflow, and that's how they illustrated the picture, that in the ohmic case, imagine a simplest situation. You have a contact in an infinite half space, right? What would you expect a flow? Now, and here they made small, unrelated to the measurement, but interpretation mistakes, which I believe that it's one of the reasons that people really need to learn fluid mechanics. So this, in an ohmic case, the current would flow straight from the contact because infinity would be my drain, right? What you would expect in a viscous case. And they plotted what they would expect in a viscous case and say that the fact that current here flows opposite, not from the source, but to the source, means that the potential here, the gradient of potential here is negative, and that explains this. That's totally wrong. In a viscous flow, it would be exactly like this one. Flow would flow in a straight lines from the source to infinity. There would be no vortices in this case, but the potential would be negative. And let me just, this is of course a simple solution of pig harmonic equation. So here is just a statement. We actually wrote a short comment. So if you look at Science Day paper, at the end of it, there are online comments, and we just commented that if one really consider a point source in an infinite half space, then the solution of pig harmonic equation, which satisfies boundary condition, is very simple. It is this one, right? So, if you find the potential, it's the same real part of Z minus 2. I mean, there's in a strip, it is the same form which has near contact, the same as it has in infinite half space. It changes sign when you cross 45 degrees. And it changes sign not because you have a backflow. Flow is always in this direction. It changes sign because the flow is fast here and it's slow here. And the viscous force which this layer of a fluid applies to that layer of the fluid make electric field look in opposite direction to have a steady flow. So the negative resistance is not because of vortices. Vortices is another byproduct of things. And this is something which relates to the fact that people who did not study fluid mechanics always mixed vorticity and vortices. Vorticity is a curl of velocity. If you have a flow which is a plane shear flow, all streamlines are straight. Just velocity in this direction is a function of y direction. Does it have a vorticity? Yes, it does. Omega is curl. It's dvx over dy. It has z component of vorticity, right? So vorticity does not mean vortex. It means this. When you do this, what is there, it rotates, right? So of course, every viscous flow has curl, generally, except trivial case, curl equal not zero. Vortex is an existence of a closed streamline. It's a integral, it's geometric, it's a topological statement, if you wish, of having vortex. It has nothing to do with the local vorticity. Local vorticity is always there. So I think it's important really to understand that the negative voltage, which you see here, that voltage is negative for theta less than 40. You wanted to ask something? Yes.
So could you also comment on the cold spots related to vorticity, or so would there be any
cold spots? The cold spot aside, which we've shown before, are related to vortices. But negative voltage is not related to, here are, you see, these are cold spots related to this, I've shown this vortex by straight line. So here I do have vortex. But the fact that my potential is negative here and positive here, it is not related to the vortex. And one can do simple computation, which I'll now show. Still have a few minutes. So the vortex in this strip, in infinite space, there are no vortices. In infinite half space, I have all straight lines, all streamlines are straight, and my potential changes sign at 45 degrees. And it's not because of vorticity, it's because of non-locality of a relation between the electric field and the current. But if you're interested where this vortex, where the separatrix between lines that would go from source to drain, and the lines which are closed loops, this separatrix is a very non-trivial, it's actually singular, it's x to the 4, y is x to the 4. It's really not very difficult to compute. And this is for no slip boundary condition, and if you use no stress, which actually game theoreticians used, then you even have a stagnation point here, so your separatrix is here, and your vortex is far away. Your potential changes sign on this line, and has nothing to do with the vortex. So I think that it's really important. So the novelty of viscous flow, first and foremost, it's a vorticity, and it's a non-locality of relation between current and between field. Current as a field, velocity as a function of coordinates, and local electric field. Local electric field doesn't determine velocity here. Right? It's velocity in the neighboring parts which determine it. And that's probably the most important. And now, of course, for this contact, you can also do this, how you, if you really look near this contact, you would see this streamlines as they go away. And if you look at the potential as a function of coordinate, you have a positive potential on a contact. And you have negative, you remember the singularity. This is the case of metallic contact. I have a constant potential on a my metal, and then it's negative. So if indeed this is possible, that would probably be technologically relevant. The fact that you can really apply positive voltage here and you get some negative voltage over there probably could be of some use. And last, warning about all this, that in the same lab, I mean, this is what I've shown, this February paper in Science, this Games lab in Manchester, they also did some other measurements related now to a clearly ballistic regime. In a ballistic regime, it's very similar geometry. So you run current through this, between this and that, and you measure voltage between this and that, right? And now you do measure negative voltage here, but you may apply magnetic field now, and magnetic field as you apply, it would, of course, change the trajectory of electrons which go from here to there. It would make them moving like this. And you see that applying magnetic field, your effect disappears, namely that, because how you would have a potential here not of this sign? It's because electron from here directly flew over there, and that's ballistic propagation would make the potential here of the opposite side than the potential here, for example, right? But these ballistics could be regulated by applying magnetic field, and then what they see. So in a sense, I still think the jury is out about their measurements in this case, where it could be that it's not really a viscous flow, but some kind of a, even though they claim that the parameters are different, it's still possible. And maybe one last thing. Yes, Max.
So when you say Ballistic here, you mean no impurity scattering and no interactions.
Just like in a wobble.
Smaller than mean free path for any
source. So the distance
between these contacts are smaller than scattering on impurities and interaction. Just fly from one and two. In a sense, ballistic is also non-trivial science. When you try to calculate what would be the distribution of, there are different subtleties over there. But in this sense, if you really have a source, an electron flies somewhere, it brings the potential from the source to this point directly, and not the of the drain which is over there. And maybe in this very February, in the same issue as Game's paper, was another paper in Science which claims that they observe this fluid mechanical viscous regime, just in this case by looking at thermal conductivity. And I'm not going to go into much detail, just if you're really interested in the subject, they somehow show that there is a substantial increase in some interval of temperature. Again, the temperature should be very low, it shouldn't be very high, that where they see an enormously large thermal conductivity, which they interpret, if graphene electrons is like a fluid near Dirac point, it's a relativistic fluid. And in a relativistic fluid, there is so-called cosmic sound. So if you, there is a mode which can propagate heat, not like a diffusion, but as a wave, like in helium second sound, different, but similar. It's called cosmic sound. It has a speed square root of 3. Anyway, so it could be that really that enhancement of thermal conductivity, it's because it really that propagates, that the heat propagates not diffusively, but convectively. But I don't have much to comment on this subject. So let me finish by saying that indeed it could be useful. And I actually brought a book with myself, and I'm going to give it as a present to your library. It's the shortest book on fluid mechanics. It's called A Short Course for Physicists. So I've already checked, your library is not very rich in fluid mechanical books, so I leave after me this book in your library, and it's really very, very short. So very much advise you to look into it. Thank you for attention.
Yes.
You say that, so it's the ballistic case is not at all related to any of this analysis. The ballistic interpretation is not related to the viscosity interpretation of the voltage switching.
You have a typical scattering electron on electron scale. You have a different scale of scattering electron on impurities. And ballistics means that both those scales are much larger than this. And in any sample, you don't really know from the beginning in which regime you work. So GAME claims that in there they do different types of measurement. And in some cases, they are sure that this is ballistic. And in some other cases, they sure that it's not ballistics. And I'm agnostic about it because I don't know. And speaking of ballistics, in different geometries, there are a lot of ballistical problems which aren't solved. I just recently tried to solve couple of such problems to compare with experiments, they are non-trivial. It's also a non-trivial, it's a bulk charge and you need to solve it with geometry.
So, the related question is, how can you tell the two apart in this kind of geometry of the...
If I can really measure the distribution of current, I can always tell one apart. Because at the moment that I know how current is a function of coordinates, then I do know whether it satisfies the condition of Stokes equation or not. Otherwise, I need to guess. And what I was trying to say, that the fact that you may see that you have a source and drain, and near the drain you can measure the potential of the same sign as a source, could be a sign of a viscous regime, it could be a sign of ballistics. That's basically the simple message. And that needs to be very careful here. Its temperature depends strongly, and it depends on the type of a sample, and everything that I'm well beyond my knowledge of solid state physics if I'll try to go more deeper into it. But they're confident, and judging by how much problems they have with referees, apparently referees were, because, we all were kind of holding each other, because all three papers were published at the same time. And not that we kind of, but editors knew about all this. And my feeling was that they really had this problem, and I think that they answered them satisfactorily, because the paper was published. But I did not meet after that. This was just recently, so I don't know the details. And this ballistic data I've seen from Ben Moshe, from another student who from Games Group who came to Weissman and shown it, that there is negative resistance also in ballistic case.
I have a question. Could you go back to the experimental slides? So why is there this non-trivial density? Is there any way to understand why the density dependence is? The density dependence kind of looks like similar to your x dependence before.
It's a density dependent. It looks this is purely superficial. I apologize for it. I just copy pasted it from it. The point is that it strongly depends on temperature and. There's also the some current which they kind of subtracted, and then you see that it's as you go for, I mean, you see that at really high temperature you don't see this phenomenon. This is this your 300 degrees curve, and then as you go to 200, it's you see this negative sign, and as you go to even lower temperature, it starts disappearing. So that's probably the main message here. It is this kind of non-monotonic dependence on the temperature. But otherwise, I would not comment. I would. This is just to give you guidance that there is such paper and that one can look into it.
So at high temperature, the phonon scattering that spoils.
High temperature is just Ohmic regime, which is basically phonons. It just give you so high Ohmic resistance that you just don't see anything.
And then as you lower the temperature, essentially the interactions disappear.
In a sense, there is a window in temperature, as far as I can understand, in which you can really see this enhancing in interaction, dominating other things. And that's more or less the same that people who study thermal conductivity also see. So there is an interval of temperature where you have strongly enhanced thermal conductivity. Okay? That's if you look into... this, you see, this is Wiedemann-Franz law. This is the interval of temperatures over here. And this what is supposed to be if this would be just a normal metal without any viscosity.
Other questions?
So what kind of boundary condition do apply on the velocity field?
We used all of them, as you can imagine, and I'm sure that in reality there will be something else. So we use no slip boundary condition as you use in fluid mechanics, saying, okay, this is a fluid and boundary is solid, and you always stick to the solid. Then we use no stress boundary condition, saying, okay, there is vacuum doesn't apply to any force, so what you want on the boundary, you want velocity gradient to be zero, namely that viscous force is zero. So it's, again, both cases are standard fluid mechanics, which I know well, no velocity, no slip, no stress. But you can use this boundary condition, which is finite resistivity on the boundary, namely that you do have flow on a boundary, but it's proportional to the gradient of. But you can do more complicated things, and you can do mixed. And by the way, this in Manchester paper, they tried mixed. The main basic phenomenon of negative voltage persists throughout, because it's something in the bulk. It's just a statement that here it moves faster, here it moves slower, and one drags another with it. So it's no, but quantitatively it's very much different. And believe it or not, it took some time to understand this, the basic simple physics of this phenomenon. Because we also thought from the beginning that it's all related to this backflow and vortices, and not just to the simple drag of one layer into another.
Okay.
Yeah.
You need to leave the room.
If there are no further questions, let's thank Gregory again. And he'll be here till through the day tomorrow. So
conference will be tomorrow, Galopo. It's a much, much simpler size.